Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. My guest on this one is, well, me. Is it because I was too lazy to book somebody to be on the pod this week? Potentially. Is this just a cash grab to sell some ads on a week when I don't have a guest? No, never. I value you, the listener, too much to simply produce content. But I'm going to talk about our favorite things, the Cubs. And a little bit about the Bears, if we can stomach it. And then I want to talk about the Jeff, is it Agrest? From the Sun-Times and his media rankings, which, honestly, I don't know why you'd even think you can do a top 20 in Chicago. It's a bad sign when there aren't any Chuggo guys on it. I mean, come on. How can you have a list that goes to 20 without those laptop balancing fat guys in cargo shorts? Huh? It's possible. Can't do it. But we're going to start with the Cubs and the fact that spring training now, the Cubs report to spring training, the pitchers at least, on Valentine's Day. How romantic. Can you think of anything more romantic than hugging Carter Hawkins on a natural grass field in the middle of a desert? I can't. They should sell that experience like the old... Is the Randy Hundley fantasy camp, that's not a thing, is it? I mean, it was, but it's not anymore. So now your fantasy is just pay $1,000 to the Ricketts family, payable, write your check to cash, and you could hug Carter Hawkins on Valentine's Day. I mean, shit, I would do it. Cubs care, clean up. They can have that idea for free. Hug a Carter on the 14th. Anyway... So Valentine's Day is a report day for the pitchers. A couple weeks late, not even a couple of weeks, 9 days later, I think, 23rd, something like that, is for the position players. And a lot of them will show up early just to show how eager they are and, you know, try to kiss ass with the new manager. So a lot of them will be there already. One guy who, as of now, would not be there is Cody Bellinger, who just happened to be the Cubs' best player last year. And they're... super complete 83-win team that had the, say it with me, fifth best record in the National League in the second half for the second year in a row. I mean, I don't know how he wouldn't want to be part of that. I mean, your chance to do that to three-peat? I mean, come on, you could do it. He hasn't signed with the Cubs, but he also hasn't signed anywhere. And, of course, we get this whole paranoid, well, his agent is Scott Boras.
And he's going to hold him out until he gets a $300 million contract, and the Cubs can't afford that.
Yeah, well, they could if they wanted to, but you shouldn't have to pay him $300 million. The thing I always remind people about Scott Boras is he doesn't make the decision for his clients. The clients make the decision. He simply presents their options and helps them find what their options are. I think there's this feeling, right, that he always steers players away from their current teams, but what he really does is he takes the shit when Bryce Harper decides he doesn't want to play for the Nationals anymore and instead signs a huge contract with the Phillies. Boras is more than happy to have Nats fans mad at him. That was kind of ironic considering that he was also Steven Strasburg's agent, and Steven wanted to stay, so he worked out a deal to stay. Of course, that deal didn't work out great for the Nationals either. They're to the point now where they're arguing over just how dead is Steven's arm. They want him to retire, designated with a career-ending injury, which would get them more insurance money. I don't know, they're fighting over the whole thing. But anyway, Scott Boras is the agent not only to Cody Bellinger, but also to Rhys Hoskins, who was just signed with the Brewers. 2 years, $34 million. I saw a lot of that. Oh, Cubs couldn't match that. Yeah, that's right. They can't afford $17 million a year for a first baseman, especially when there was an out where you might have not even had to pay him for year two. And they love those. That's why Cody isn't under contract this year. At least not yet. And he's also the agent to Matt Chapman. And the Cubs, I don't know if you've noticed, they need a third baseman. Here we are. We're 21 days, as I record this, from spring training. The Cubs don't have a center fielder. I mean, they have Mike Tauchman, so they don't have a center fielder. They don't have a first baseman. I mean, they traded for the Dodgers' top prospect, Michael Busch. I'm sure that'll go flawlessly. Or they could play Patrick Wisdom over there. That would be great. And they don't have a third baseman, although they do have spunky little Nick Madrigal, or Mick Nadrigal. I've heard it both ways. And Patrick Wisdom. Patrick could play first and third at the same time. That'd be fun. So it kind of behooves them to be chatting with Scott Boras, because maybe you could get Cody, who he would come back, and he would most likely start off in center field, and then when Pete Crow Armstrong. It's not Pete Crow Armstrong, according to Rick Sutcliffe. Our buddy Forklift pointed this out. It's Pete Crow Armstrong. Pete Crow, all one word. When he'll be ready this year at some point, and he'll burst onto the scene, and then Cody will, like, all right, this is my... Sorry, Cody. I'm center fielder now for the next decade. You got to go play first. But they could do that. I love to give Pete Crow a lot of shit, mostly just because I feel like he's so overhyped, and this is not his fault, right? Like, I honestly think he's going to be a good player, and I think he will hit, and I think eventually he will learn that on the bases you just keep turning left, things will work out, and he's obviously is a very good defensive center fielder. But the prospect perverts have made him out to be, you know, he's Willie Mays. Maybe he is. Maybe he's going to start out like Willie. Wasn't Willie like 1-for-38 or something when he started? Maybe that's what Pete will do, and then he'll take off, and he'll hit 600 home runs, and he'll be a Hall of Famer. Not unanimous. We learned on Wednesday when we were talking about will Ichiro be a unanimous Hall of Famer next year, which he won't. Somebody will vote against him. That Willie Mays didn't. 23 guys didn't vote for Willie Mays on the ballot the first year. Unbelievable. Joe DiMaggio, I don't think, made it in on the first ballot, right? That's some crazy shit. I know Yogi Berra didn't, because somebody pointed that out today. But anyways, you're not signing Cody, you're not blocking anybody. If you sign Matt Chapman, which I'm not that excited about, I don't think he's that good. Like, he's an excellent defensive third baseman, although some of the numbers are starting to veer in the wrong direction. He has a great arm. And you know, he's not going to be a bad, if you sign him, he's not going to be a bad player. You're not going to be at risk of signing a bad player, but his offense has never been great. He's one of those guys who his like underlying numbers get everybody all excited. Oh, he hits the ball so hard. He should have hit 42 homers last year, but he hit 18 because it was amazing. He hit 24 seagulls in Toronto. Sometimes even with the roof closed, he did bomb to left field, hits a seagull, falls helplessly in the left fielder's glove. I don't know how he did it. But that's not my money. If the Cubs want to sign Matt Chapman, go get him. Now there's all the, oh my God, he's going to block Matt Shaw. Like, good. Maybe Matt Shaw will be really good. I hope he is. But how many games did he play last year? I know he went to Double A and he hit, and that was good. But he was there for like a month and a half at the most. Maybe not even. Let's not put all of our eggs in the Matt Shaw basket. He can play somewhere else if he comes up and somebody is hoarding third base. And then there's the thing that I think Craig Counsell will do that our beloved Dancing with the Stars runner-up David Ross refused, and that is take advantage of the fact that your primary designated hitter, Christopher Morel, is a utility player who can play, maybe not great, but he can play all three outfield spots. He could play second base. That's actually seems to be his best position. And he should be getting a lot of work at third base. So that even if you sign Matt Chapman, or even if you mid-season you bring Matt Shaw up, and all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, he's Mike Schmidt. We didn't, you know, look at this, amazing. The thing that Ross refused to do with Morella didn't make any sense was while he was wearing all of his position players out by playing them every day, he refused to do the sensible thing, which was to put Morella in the field at a position and then take that guy that day and let him DH and get a quasi day off. So say he needs a day off, you don't have to take his bat out of the lineup. Morella goes and wanders around right field for a day. Ian Happ needs a day off. He goes and wanders around left field. Maybe Ian could even teach him how to slide under every fly ball for no reason. That would be good. Dansby needs a day off. Morel plays second base. Nico plays short. Then Nico needs a day off. Morel plays second base. Dansby's back at shortstop. And these guys are still getting their at-bats, and they're still playing. So this precious play of the guys who get you here, they're actually doing it. Like, that would have worked. But they never tried it. It was weird. Their whole thing was, like, the only time guys got days off under Ross was when they were in a horrible slump. And he would, like, sit them for, like, 5 days. So he did it to Morelli, did it to Saya. And he was convinced that's what fixed Saya. And then Saya apparently told Jed or Carter, I forget which one of those geniuses told the story. I think it was Jed. That Saya had been working on trying to hit the ball farther out in front of the plate. So to get the ball in the air more. And, They were blowing out the Reds, and the Reds' backup catcher came in to pitch. And Saya's like, well, shit, if I'm ever going to do it, I'm going to do it now. And he did. He got way out. He hit the ball out in front, and he hit a bomb. And that was like the second or third of August, and he went nuts the rest of the time.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You don't have to sit these guys for a week to get their shit together. But it would be nice to get them off their feet. You know, Dansby played the last 2 months or whatever on a bad heel. It was part of the reason why his offense crapped out so bad. Although thankfully he had Michael Cerami over at Bleacher Nation to just say he doesn't need to hit. They didn't get him to hit. Like, I think they did. I think they did get him to hit and to field. But shouldn't Morel have played more second base those last 2 months with Nico filling in a shortstop and Dansby still getting his at-bats if you need him, but getting off his feet a little bit. It seems like that might have been a nice thing. I really do think that what got Ross fired wasn't the excessive bunting. it was wearing out the bullpen and wearing out his players. I have a feeling he was getting feedback from the khaki pants brigade in the front office that this guy needs a day off, this guy needs a day off. And he just wasn't, he's like, no, I need him. Got to have him today. Can't win tomorrow's game today. Well, you can lose tomorrow's game today. So thanks for that. But anyway, I'm hoping that Craig finds that a way to use Morel to continue to get him a lot of at-bats. I'm a little worried about it. I love Christopher Morel, but I am worried that we kind of saw peak offensive Christopher Morel last year, and maybe a more ruthless organization wouldn't get so defensive about the rumors that you're trying to trade him. They might actually try to trade him. But I don't know that for sure. I'll just trust Jed. I mean, when's he ever steered us wrong? So, and we talk about, what if they don't bring Cody back? Well, if you don't bring Cody back, then you not only, it's very difficult to see how you possibly improve this offense from last year. If you take the best hitter out of your lineup from last year and then you don't adequately replace him, which I don't see how they could right now. There'd have to be a trade that we don't foresee to get a player in here who would actually have as good offense as Cody provided last year. You need to get Cody back, and you need to add another bat to get better. You won 83 games last year, and it wasn't enough. And I know there's all this, I even saw somebody who was like, they were so close. If Dansby catches that line drive off of, I forget whose ass it hit. I'm just going to guess it hit Jameson Taillon's ass because it's the biggest one. But that's not what it was because it was late in the game. And I know there are people who think that Dansby let it drop on purpose because he didn't think he could catch it. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Now, what I could have seen was him catch it and still throw it to first, thinking that he still had to get a force. But pretty sure he knows that you can touch that ball. I don't know. If they win that game, now all they do is they tie the Diamondbacks. They didn't have the tiebreaker. You needed that, and you needed... then the other one is, Seiya dropped that fly ball in Atlanta. They would have won that game. I got news for you. They weren't winning that game. They had a one-run lead. Braves were still going to bat in the eighth and the ninth. Julian Merriweather was going to... I guess that was the eighth where they batted. They still were going to bat in the ninth. Julian Merriweather was coming in because the rest of the bullpen had been fried by that point. The Barbs were going to score at least a run to tie it. Probably four. In the bottom of the ninth. And they were going to win that game. So I don't think that that impacted it all that much. But even the idea, okay, so if they get in, then people are like, the Diamondbacks won the World Series. It comes to the World Series. No. The Diamondbacks were, for a plucky young team, they were really well set up for short series. They could basically eliminate most of their bullpen. They were using freaking openers in the playoffs because they didn't have more than two good starters. But that's all they really needed. They found a way through. The Cubs, had they gotten there, I mean, I think they were going to play Milwaukee. I'm pretty sure they were going to get beat by Milwaukee and then come home. And then hopefully it all would have still happened and Council still would have replaced Ross. And then he could have said, well, it's because he lost the playoffs. It was like a tournament. Council won. He got to coach the Cubs, manage the Cubs. The Bellinger thing is interesting to me in that we have all these amateur contract experts. Even if it falls down to 5 years and $150 million, I wouldn't pay him that. Why do you give a shit what they pay him? Pay him. It's not your money. And $25 million a year for 6 years, if that's what it costs, that's what it costs. My guess is, I still think, and I'm just being naive, maybe it's because I can't fathom what happens if they don't. I do still think the Cubs are going to get him. I think they're going to have to pay more than they're comfortable with, and I think he's going to end up signing for less than what Boris thinks he's worth. Because the market does not seem to be. I think his other best option is probably the Giants, and I think that's a terrible park for him. His revamp swing especially is tailor-made for Wrigley, where he can stay back on the ball and still hit the ball out to the to the power alley and left. At San Francisco, that's just an out. And it's going to be an out over and over and over again. So I think at the end of the day, he's clearly enjoyed himself in Chicago. A lot of the stuff he still enjoyed about the Cubs are still there. He doesn't seem to me like a guy who was all that attached to David Ross. So I don't think he's like, oh, I can't play there. Look what they did to Rossi. My guess is his contract will have a couple of phony baloney option years on the end. Say it's for this discussion. Say it is 6 and 150. There'll be option years for years 7 and 8 at $25 million, so that it's a $200 million contract. It's 8 years, $200 million, but it's really not. It's kind of like those NFL deals where the number is huge, and then it's like, oh, he signed for 6 years, $148 million, and $24 million of it is guaranteed. It's like, well, it's a $24 million contract then. I think they'll end up, there will be some contract kabuki to make it feel like he got more than he got, make everybody happy. And I can see the Ricketts chickening out at the last minute then, and just being like, all right, we can't pay him that. And they're like, no, we explained this to you, Tom. We're never going to pay him that money. Yeah, but I see it's on the contract. It's like, it'll be okay. So then I know there are some people who are like, well, what are the odds that Cody, that last year was an outlier? He was so bad the 2 years before that, and he's terrible. He's one of the worst players in baseball, one of the least productive hitters in baseball for 2 years. And if he hadn't had a shoulder injury, and then I think a shin, he did another weird injury. He had two. It would have been indefensible just how bad he was. But it's pretty clear now, given he changed his swing back more to what he had done before. He was getting to pitches he wasn't able to get to, that he really wasn't healthy. And now he is. And obviously there's the fear. What if he picks up another injury? And then, you know, if is his swing like so, like it has to be right here and everything has to work perfectly, or it can't hit at all? I don't know, man. I mean, players play with injury all the time, but sometimes you get one that you just can't do what you need to do. And you could get an injury a year later, and it's not that. Like, I hurt my shoulder again, but it's not like the one I had before. I don't know. Every contract has risk. If you don't want to sign risk, then you don't. And clearly Jed is risk averse, right? Like, why does Ian Happ have a 3-year, $60 million deal? Is it because, oh, that was such a great deal? No, I think even the Cub front office is like, he's okay. But they're like, but if we sign, he wants to stay, he wants to sign this, and then we don't have to go find another left fielder. What if we have to pay more for somebody else? What if you have to pay more for somebody better, right? That, to me, is the biggest issue. The Cubs, they do not aspire to be the best at anything. They just want to be pretty good, and then they just seem to think that maybe everything will somehow fall into place, and it'll all work out. And it's like, well, that doesn't happen very often. You know, it's like they didn't learn from their own success. The 2016 Cubs were not built to win 84 games and sneak into the playoffs. They were built to win 100 games and kick everybody's ass. And they did. It worked. And now they're like, okay, that was great, but we don't need to do that again. Like, why? Are you telling me they lost money on the 2016 Cubs? Of course they didn't. They could add $100 million to this payroll, and they could still turn a profit. And even better, they could easily pretend to have not turned a profit. That's their favorite thing, right? Is to cook the books for tax purposes and luxury tax purposes and everything else. Make it a game for them. You know, put Todd in charge of, here, we're going to remember the time you took a picture of your old house before you redid it. And then you tried to pay taxes on that, even though you did. This will be just like that, only different. And you're in charge. It'll be great. So they could try that. What is Rhys Hoskins to the Brewers? How does that impact the Cubs? It probably doesn't. I think Rhys was always the fallback if Cody signed somewhere else. Guarantee you, they are convinced that Pete Crow is going to be their center fielder sometime this year, and Cody's going to be playing a lot of first base, and we'll, you know, and then that cascading effect. They didn't want to pay Reese to be primarily a DH, and then you got to find a position for Morrell, and you know, you could easily do all that stuff, but I don't think they wanted to do it. Hopefully, the reason he signed for 2 years and $34 million, which is more than what people thought he was going to get, is because the Cubs were bidding it up on the Brewers with no real intention of ever saying yes. I don't know that for a fact. I do know that, you know, it will make Milwaukee better, because if he's healthy, Reese is a productive player, and their offense is usually pretty bad. So that will help. I don't really know what to think about Michael Busch yet. I remember when he played halfback for the Bears. He's a big dude. Well, that's probably not the same guy. You know, it's funny. Tom Ricketts was going on and on in his 6 minutes of chatter at the Cub convention about how the Cubs traded for the minor league player of the year. Well, no, the minor league player of the year was Jackson Holliday of the Orioles. The minor league player of the year is usually like the best prospect in baseball. What Michael Busch was the Pacific Coast League player of the year. And sometimes those guys are good. Like Ty France was the Pacific Coast League, and he's been a pretty good player. I think he was an all-star for the Mariners once. But it's like, okay, it's not that impressive. Guys who play full seasons in the Pacific Coast League are probably not that good. David Bodie should be a perennial Pacific Coast League MVP candidate, and we don't really want that again. Although we're still paying him. I think is this right? Is this the last guaranteed year for Bodie? He has two option years at like $7 million. That contract is still just cracks me up. It was clearly Theo being frustrated with not being able to sign anybody to a long-term contract. And it's like Bodie walked by his office and he's like, "Hey, Bodie, come here." And he just like drew it up on a napkin. I was like, "All right, you want this?" And he's like, "Okay." Busch supposedly can play some outfield, but badly, some third base, inadequately, and maybe some first. Yeah, that's great. He's a left-handed bat with some pop. He did not have horrible strikeout numbers in the minors. But I don't want to, you know, discourage you guys. Maybe you love this other guy, but when you compare his Pacific Coast League numbers and his big league numbers last year to Matt Mervis, they're almost identical. That's great. I did think it was funny that MLB.com, I think, is one of doing it. They're ranking like the top 10 prospects every position, and they got to first base, and Matt Mervis was sixth. It's like, we saw that, man. That's unless there's a huge change, like 180 degree change. I don't think that's gonna happen. So what happens if the Cubs, even if they do get Cody? But they still need to add, where are all these trades we were promised, right? Like, not just with the Cubs, but with anybody. You know, this was this whole idea that the Sinclair TV money uncertainty would force some teams into trimming payroll unexpectedly because they're not going to get the money they got. Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, Amazon apparently is going to invest into Sinclair, the Diamond Sports Network, or whatever they call it. Group, I guess. And they're going to sell packages on Prime, local packages for those teams. So there's some extra income coming in, but it's not really expected to be that much money. Like, it'll help. You know, Amazon throwing some money in will help. But these teams still aren't going to get their full checks. They can't. Sinclair can't afford to pay them. But the other thing is, nobody's due a paycheck until the 15th of April. So there's no incentive yet to make any trades. You know, you're not literally saving any money yet until the season starts. So I still think there is a chance that some unexpectedly big trades will happen in spring training, which would be kind of fun. You know, that used to be a thing. You know, like the 84 Cubs, two-thirds of their outfield changed one day at the end of spring training because the Phillies are like, fine, you can have Gary Matthews and Bob Dernier. I mean, and that kind of stuff used to happen. Two of the greatest Cubs of all time were acquired at the waiver deadline. Not the waiver deadline. They were acquired at the cutdown date when the Blue Jays tried to sneak, this was years apart, but they tried to sneak two guys through waivers that the Cubs were wise, and they snapped them up. Reed Johnson and Louis Valbuena. So stuff can happen late. But like I said, we're getting close. And it would be nice to fill some huge holes. There's still the bullpen. They're like 40% shy of a real bullpen. So there's some stuff we got to do. I don't know what kind of calendar Jed has in his office, but it's like the old joke that Derek Lee used to be such a terrible. He started so terribly that I always thought the Cubs should get him a calendar that every month was June. And then maybe they did in 2005. That's when he went off. I don't know. I want to talk just quickly about the Bears. They did hire their offensive coordinator. They hired Shane Waldron. Not Shane Walton. That's a different guy. But Shane Waldron, who had been the offensive coordinator for the in Seattle. And he goes back to, I believe, original Shanahan. Is that right? In Washington. And the Rams with Sean McVay, he was the quarterback coach when they got the Super Bowl season out of Jared Goff. I think the thing he did that was most impressive was when the Seahawks dumped Russ, that he got a 4,500-yard season out of Geno Smith, which would easily make him the greatest passer in Bear history. So we'll see. Everybody's trying to read the tea leaves. Does this mean that they're going to trade Justin? Does this mean they're going to keep Justin? And you can't tell, right? Because he's worked with varied enough quarterbacks that he probably could craft an offense for Caleb Williams or Justin Fields. So we just don't know. I talk a lot on the Bear podcast about how the Bears in Chicago are covered by the most amount of people. Like, everybody's got Bear reporters, and everybody's got, and but they're also covered ineptly for the most part, right? And I thought that you couldn't have had a better example of that than the news broke about Waldron. Mully and Hugh call their guy, Brad Biggs, to have him break it down. And Waldron's a guy that, you know, the Bears had interviewed. He was clearly one of the leading candidates. There was all this stuff. And Biggs was like, well, him and Flus had the same agent. What else? That's about it. That's some quality analysis. Thank you. Thank you for that. The one thing we don't have to worry about, because the Chargers took us off the hook for at least a while, is the return of Jim Harbaugh. It's fine. I get it. He's been successful everywhere he's coached. University of San Diego, Stanford, the Niners, Michigan. But he's just way too much. It's just, there's got to be, you know, he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. And the other teams, you can win a Super Bowl without Jim Harbaugh. So let's do that. Because, God, what a fucking pain in the ass. He's one of my least favorite Bear players ever. I hated him. Man, not quite to Bob Avellini levels, but close. And the idea, I'm not naive. At some point in our lives, he's going to coach the Bears. Like, he'll only beat the Chargers for like 4 or 5 years because he wears himself out. He wears out his welcome so much. But at least we can put it off. Maybe by then the Flus will have won like 3 Super Bowls. We won't have to worry about it. Vic Fangio quit as the defensive coordinator of the Dolphins, and people are like, oh, the Bears will hire him. But it's funny, he quit to be closer to his family in Pennsylvania. The Eagles just happened to have the job open, so it's pretty clear that's where he's going. I mean, Chicago is technically closer to western Pennsylvania, or eastern Pennsylvania, I guess, if he's going to Philly, than Miami, but that's probably not where Vic's going. Bears interviewed old Hammerhead, Chris Harris, the safety from their last Super Bowl team. He was a respected defensive coach. I think with the Titans most recently. to be the defensive coordinator. It sure seems like the Flus is still going to call the defensive plays, so you're kind of a defensive coordinator in title more than maybe in role. But still, I think he's a position coach now, so if he took that job, that's a nice step up for him, and it would be, you know, he was a well-liked Bear, so why the hell not? And then the last thing I want to talk about was the Sun-Times list of the 20. It's like a power ranking of Chicago's, I guess it's only TV and radio guys, right? If you look at this, there's no, like, I mean, otherwise, why wouldn't I be on it? And their number one guy is Pat Hughes, and I'm not going to argue with the Hall of Famer, Virgil Patrick Hughes. Number two, Adam Amin. I like Adam. Good. Number three, Boog. No, not Boog. It's weird, right? Like, I don't think anybody, well, maybe there are. I don't think Cub fans, like, hate Boog. He's just, I really think, and maybe I'm just giving him too much credit, I think this is the style of broadcast that Markey wants them to do. This kind of chatty, it's almost like it's a talk show, and it's kind of a broadcast, and we got to go to Taylor 14 times a game, and hey, we're going to have four guys in the booth today and six tomorrow, and then JD's going to leave for 2 weeks for no reason, and all this other stuff. It's a low-quality broadcast, and I think you can't reward the play-by-play guy for a low-quality broadcast, unless the ranking is all about talking about tennis shoes, then sure, why not? And then, like, Bernstein and Rahimi and Lawrence Holmes, it seems like a lazy ranking. We'll just take the mid-morning show on the score. We'll just throw them in there. Cap is on here. Why not? He even gets extra credit for his recaps on YouTube. I have a theory about the recaps, right? Like, Cap and I like Cap. I'd love to give him a hard time. I'll never stop giving him a hard time. He honestly is a super nice dude. One of the nicest people you're ever going to meet. But still incredibly fun to make fun of. So there's no reason to stop that. He's got, I don't know how many, 162,000 subscribers to the recaps. I absolutely, that's true. You can see it, right? I think nobody watches more than the first 20 seconds of any of them. That's just my theory. old Mushface is on here, Danny Parkins. Number nine. I feel kind of bad for Parkins. Just a little bit. I mean, yeah, I mean, born without a chin. That's a tough break. What I feel sorry for him for is he has the skill set to be a national radio host, and it's clearly what he wants to be, and there aren't any anymore, right? Like, ESPN Radio is barely a thing. And Fox Sports Radio is barely a thing. And Sirius XM, you know, you got to, like, suck up to the Mad Dog. And then even when you do, who listens to that? It's, you know, I don't get it. So really what you have to do then is it's TV now. That's where you have to make that. And if you look like that, it's never going to happen. So I feel kind of bad. Mark Silverman's on here. Sylvie, he should get extra credit because he took over Hub's column and on Shaw newspapers. Dion Miller, fine. Jason Goff, fine. Stacey King, Tom Waddle. Stoney. I always think Steve Stone was the most overrated analyst in Chicago sports history. There was a time when he was really good, and he deserves a lot of credit for. He had to do the thing that Pat then had to do later with Santo, was he kind of had to, like, he had to nudge Harry back a lot. Like, late stage Harry was getting lots of things wrong or not paying attention or whatever, and Stone could kind of keep it without being really obvious about it, keeping Harry on track. And Pat had to do that a lot with Santo, who in the middle of one of Pat's calls would be like, what did Grozelonic do? That was four batters ago. Were you just now catching up with your scorebook? And to me, that's where the list just ends, is at 15. Like, there literally weren't 20. Because you're stretching it to get to 15. Then you get Darren Pang. Did anybody get excited about little Panger coming back? I don't think so. And then 17 and 18 are just egregious.
That's awful. It should. The editor should have flagged this and said, we're not printing this, because you can't get to 20 if 17 and 18 are Zach Zaidman and Jeff Joniak. Zaidman is a terrible baseball announcer, and he's just such a prick. So, no, is it the fake laughing power ranking? Because he'd be number one. He'd be 1 and 1A. He's so good at that. And then 18 is Jeff Joniak. Told the story a million times. I'm going to tell again just because it's fun. My dad was a farmer. One day I'm at home watching a bear game. This is after I've gone off and become gainfully employed. And I get a call from Dad on a cell phone. This was like a new thing. Dad had a cell phone. And he's on the combine. He's working. And he's like, what's the score of the bear game? And the various times, the tractors and combines we had, sometimes the radios in them just didn't work. And that was not a real high priority on the farm, getting those fixed. So I thought, oh, I'm like, is the radio not working? He's like, no. It's working. I'm like, well, how do you not know? He's like, I go, did you just get in the cab? And he's like, I've been in the cab for 15 minutes. He's like, that fucker has not said the score. That was Jeff Joniak. Was some keeping fans in the dark for 15 minutes, talking about everything but what the score of the game he was doing was. One thing that I intended to do last year, I promise I will do it this year, is I want to listen to the first quarter of a game. I'm going to watch it on TV because I won't know what happens otherwise. I'm going to listen to Joniak's call, and I'm just going to keep track of all of the weird things he either gets wrong or omits. Because occasionally I'll get stuck. I'll time it wrong. I'll get stuck in the car for the first few minutes of a Bear game. I'll have to listen to him, and I'll find myself yelling at the dashboard. Like, he's famous for this. It'd be like, you know, here's the handoff to Herbert, and he runs out of bounds right there. What? Where's there? It's like, Jeff, it's fucking radio. We don't know where there is. You just have to tell us. He can go stretches without telling you the down or the distance or how much time is left or the score. It's just like he only has that job because the McCaskies think he's swell. And I really, really worry that the Ricketts have a lot of that in them. And then Pat is going to retire or die. He's never allowed to do either. And they're just going to make Zaidman the radio guy. And that means I'm just never going to be able to listen to a Cub radio broadcast. Donnie and I talk about it. I remember this crap, and this is true. If I'm listening to a game, you know, when it gets to the fifth inning, I will use the MLB app, and I will listen to the other team's call for the fifth. Because I can't stomach Zaidman at all. That's kind of a nice way to – I can't do it with the Cardinals. There's no way I would do it with them. But other teams, like with the Mets, like, oh, listen to Wayne Randazzo for an inning. That'll be fine. Thank God. You shouldn't have to do that. But that's where we are. Anyway, I'm going to work hard, guys, and I'm going to get actual guests the next couple of weeks so that you don't have to just listen to me ramble to myself for 40 minutes, however long this one was. But I appreciate those of you who stuck around to the end. Treat yourself. Renew your subscription to Pointless Exercise newsletter. Or just go back and listen to some podcasts. There's, Donahue and I have Remember This Craps to catch up on. And I've got a couple of other guys that I want to talk to before we get baseball intensive. I fully intend to continue to do the baseball podcast with our good friend Dave Brown. But we're also going to add one that's a little more Cub intensive. Because I don't want to force poor Dave, who's a national baseball writer, into talking only about the Cubs. So we'll work on that too. So we've got all that coming up. And thanks for listening. And join me again next time.
Many of us have herpes.
I don't know. What's up yours?